From the studios at KPCW in Park City, Utah, this is Cool Science Radio, science and technology that's accessible, educational, and fun. I'm John Wells. I'm here with Lynn Ware Peak. I first want to mention something real time. It's a traffic update, and that is that Interstate 80 East is backed up a bit because State Road 224 is backed up. It's probably a 30-minute backup just to get to the Silver Spring light. We'll have more on traffic probably at the end of the program, so stay with us. Our first guest this morning, Bill Andrews, who's the senior associate editor for Discover magazine. Every year at this time, Discover publishes their pick of the top 100 science stories of 2016. And we look forward to this conversation every year. We take a look at a handful of the top 100, their relevance this past year, and where they may take us in the future.
And good morning, John. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Our second guest this morning is Mark Saltzman. He's a syndicated technology journalist who writes about the latest in consumer electronics. Saltzman is attending the International CES, that's the Consumer Electronics Show, taking place right now in Las Vegas. This is the world's gathering place for the latest consumer technologies, and I cannot imagine the quantity and the magnitude of it. But Mark has been scouting the show floor to find what gadgets are making news, plus some of the top trends being introduced at the 2017 CES. We look forward to that conversation with Mark Saltzman.
These two guests plus today's cool story when we return. You're listening to Cool Science Radio. Stay with us.
Spend the day and cover billions of years at the Natural History Museum of Utah. The museum offers innovative exhibits and hands-on experiences. Native voices explore the traditions of Utah's native peoples. The Great Salt Lake Gallery tells the story of the largest saltwater lake in the Western Hemisphere. The Past Worlds exhibit includes more than a dozen new species of dinosaurs discovered right here in Utah. Visit nhmu.utah.edu. The Natural History Museum of Utah is a nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We are on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells. I'm here with Lynn Ware Peak. Our first guest this morning, Bill Andrews, who's the senior associate editor for Discover magazine. And every year in the first week of January, we have a conversation with Bill about Discover's special issue on the top science stories of the previous year. This year's notables include a century-old prediction of gravitational waves from, well, Einstein, scary smart artificial intelligence, next-generation spaceflight, and many more. Bill Andrews, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Oh no, we lost him.
Oh, well, we'll try to get him back on.
That's right. Let's go to some underwriters, and we'll hope to get him back in just a moment. Stay with us. It's Cool Science Radio.
Hi, this is Angela from Peak Art and Frame, longtime supporters of KPCW. Peak Art and Frame offers custom picture framing, rush options, hanging and delivery services, and in-house designers. Open Monday through Saturday, located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801 or peakartandframe.com.
Hi, I'm Davey Ratchford from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain hosts winter events throughout the season, including the annual Torchlight Parade, New Year's Eve celebration, Spring Groove, and more. More information about all Park City Mountain events can be found at parkcitymountain.com.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. We thought we lost our esteemed first guest, Bill Andrews, the senior associate editor for Discover magazine. But as it turns out, he miraculously appeared again in the blizzard. Bill Andrews, good morning to you.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Bill, last year, well, to this day, I guess it was a year ago today, we were having a conversation about the top 100 stories of 2015, and it was a remarkable issue, and my favorite planet, or favorite ex-planet, Pluto, was featured, and it was just, you know, one heck of a year in scientific discovery. And then flashing forward 12 months to the top stories of 2016, I think we've outdone 2015.
I think you're right. It was a tough year to follow, for sure. And somehow in science, they were able to top it even more. I mean, a lot of the top few stories for this year are just unbelievable. I really don't know where we can go from here. I'm curious to find out.
But every one of these stories as a launching point has all sorts of implications for the future. So it's going to be exciting. We should probably start with the one that has tremendous upside, as we've only learned a little bit about it, and that would be gravitational waves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, this is the biggest story, not just of the year, but the decade, you know, even bigger. For me, I think this is the biggest thing this century, since 2000. It's a huge deal that we were able to detect these gravitational waves directly for the first time ever.
Yeah. And for 5,000 years, we've been looking up into the sky, and we've been viewing the universe through, you know, somewhere between 400 nanometers and 700 nanometers, you know, between the red and the purples and everything, mm-hmm. what we optically are able to see with our eyes or with telescopes. And now in the last 100 years with radioscopes and with X-ray and everything else, it'll be interesting to see what the next 50 years brings us as we look at the universe through a gravitational lens, as we learn more about this and we start building devices that will allow us to look at it from the perspective of gravity.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I've been putting it to people. It's like discovering a new color that we can look at the universe in. Because every time, everything you mentioned, the radio waves and UV and infrared, every time astronomers looked at the universe in a different color, they found new things, stuff they would never have guessed at. So far with gravitational waves, we've found things that we were kind of expecting. The first detections were two black holes colliding, and after that, other kinds of black holes and kind of expected things. But yeah, now we get to start really looking at the universe to see what it tells us in this new color of gravity.
You know, Bill, I stopped down at the coffee shop that's right below the radio station this morning and ran into a friend of mine, and we started talking about astrophysics, which sounds pretty nice to have a conversation about, but what we were talking about is at the end of the day, we don't understand it. And John and I have done, I don't know, probably two or three interviews about gravitational waves. We talked to someone from Hanford, Washington, right after the discovery last year. And, you know, I think people would like to understand it in a way that made more sense to them. Is there a way, because you're so good at this, I'm impressed every time we've talked to you about how easily you make things to understand.
Well, I guess now the pressure's on, of course.
Yes.
I mean, the way I think of them, of the gravitational waves themselves, is kind of, it'll sound poetic, but I'll try and back it up. It ripples in space-time, right? That sounds very kind of Carl Sagan. But it literally is the idea that the fabric of the universe, so this thing called space-time, which is the idea of like physical space, even empty space, but there's still the space itself is there, the kind of backdrop, is intertwined with time. And that's what Einstein first kind of made famous and told us. And everything since him has confirmed it. In fact, the gravitational waves are a confirmation of one of his of a part of his theories, too, so this isn't kind of Einstein-related, which is great, sells magazines. But what that really means is that the actual space itself, the space-time of the universe, everything, will kind of contract and spread out like warping in a funhouse mirror. So it literally means that the space between two points gets a little smaller and gets a little bigger. And when I say a little, I mean very, very little. It's something equivalent to the distance between Earth and the nearest star, Proxima Centauri, shrinking and warping out about the width of a human hair. So it's not a very big warp. You know, it's not a huge distance that space itself travels. But that is what we're talking about, the actual fabric of everything, of the universe itself that we live in, stretching out and shrinking just because of these gravitational waves passing through it, like ripples on the surface of a pond.
So what Bill was talking about earlier about the different colors is that we've been looking at the universe through an optical lens for what we're able to see, and then we've been able to build some instrumentation that allows us to look at it in infrared and X-ray and gamma and all that. And there's a whole new range of instruments that can be built so that we can look at it through a gravitational lens. So it's a whole new way of looking at the universe.
Exactly.
That's great.
And this is the first time that we've been able to do it. They've been trying for a long time. As you can imagine, such tiny little warps aren't easy to find, and the observatories that found them, the LIGO Observatory, has been trying for a while, but finally they were able to get their precision perfect enough and their lasers aligned perfectly enough that they were actually able to find it. So now that we know it's possible, yeah, off to the races.
Oh, yeah. And they just beat the next observatory by 10 milliseconds or something in detecting it. So the races slim margin.
Yeah, it's not a huge, right. It's all pretty small. And that falls perfectly in with the theory, because it takes that long for it to get from the one in Washington to the one in Louisiana, the two different LIGO observatories. So the fact that they were, it was just a little bit late, just those fractions of a second fell in line perfectly. It all really worked out almost too well. Everyone was shocked.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to move on to story number two, but how about if we come back to that? Because I want to jump around a little bit to challenge you. No, I want to jump around.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
She is testing you this morning, Bill.
I know. Well, we can't stay out. Yeah. We can't stay out in space forever. So let's bring it home a little bit. Last February, the onset of the Zika virus affecting so many in South America and in tropical regions and making its way into the United States. But I don't know if it's because it's not mosquito season specifically. We've stopped hearing about it. But in the article in Discover Magazine, it showed that they're making some headway in at least some vaccines against it.
That's right. And that's a really good sign. The big story from last year, the big kind of disease story, was Ebola and that outbreak. And that was terrible and kind of terrifying. And eventually there was progress on that front. And so, yes, this year Zika became kind of the new big disease that everyone found out about. Mosquito-borne, like you said. And it isn't as deadly, but it does have kind of equally heartbreaking effects in producing pregnant women who get it can have really heartbreaking birth defects in their kids. And so, and the progress on this one, yes, it's been a little impressive to me. I know that the CDC and everybody always works really hard on these things, but the progress I've heard about is fantastic, and how they've been able to come out with vaccines that monkeys are already being protected against Zika infections. And so human trials are just around the corner for that, so hopefully that'll be a good sign. Like you said, this is a good season for it because mosquitoes aren't as big a threat to as many people in the colder climates. I understand it's very snowy and super cold out there right now, so not mosquito season to worry about, which is also good. The other major thing they found is the actual proteins in the Zika virus that block normal fetal development in those pregnant women. So having found the actual culprits that are behind this, the worst side effect, it should be, nothing's a really straight shot in science, but it should be about as straight as you can get to be able to do something about it and help out all the future potential victims of the Zika virus.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Bill Andrews, who is the Senior Associate Editor for Discover Magazine. We're talking about an issue which comes out every January, the beginning of January, and that's the 100 Top Scientific Stories. Well, eight planets in our little solar system, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and, well, we had nine, Pluto. Pluto was demoted, but then eight no more, there may be a ninth, and it's hard to believe that our own little solar system it hasn't been confirmed yet, but can you talk about this ninth mystery planet?
Sure. No, this is, I love the kind of background of the story, because one of the main guys who is behind this discovery of this new ninth planet is Caltech's Mike Brown, who was instrumental in demoting Pluto from planetary status to dwarf planet. And his Twitter handle is Pluto Killer. So he's very proud.
That's good.
Of his,
I don't like him.
Hunting prowess. Yes, he has gotten a lot of hate mail, and this is actually when I worked at Astronomy Magazine here at Discover. Pluto's planetary status is one of the biggest drivers of letters and emotions. People really get into Pluto status. So the fact that the main player in that whole situation is behind the new ninth planet, or the possible new ninth planet, I think is really interesting. And what he found, he and a coworker, a colleague at Caltech, studied the orbits of not planets, but other kind of objects out in the distant solar system, out beyond Neptune's orbit, where there's all kinds of icy bodies and nothing big enough to be called a planet. But he noticed, they noticed, that everything kind of, their orbits lined up in a weird way that shouldn't normally happen. Something was probably causing these orbits to line up that way. And when they ran the numbers and did the gravitational analysis and everything, they realized that the most likely explanation is a new major planet, something a little smaller than Neptune. It would be about 10 times Earth's mass, but they were able to plot its orbit. They were able to tell, like I said, the mass that it would probably have, and they don't know where exactly in its orbit it would be, but they know enough that it wouldn't be super close to the sun, because otherwise we'd have seen it by now. So they're actually kind of, the search is narrowing as we speak. And Mike Brown is pretty hopeful that we'll be able to actually find it, confirm this ninth planet's existence fairly soon. So, yeah, we could be back up to nine planets in the solar system.
Very exciting. Well, Lynn picked one. I picked one. We're going to ask you to pick one that is one of your favorites, and let's talk about it.
Oh, sure. Well, one of my favorites, and there was kind of a lot of bad news this year. I don't need to tell you guys about the meme, I'm sure, of 2016 being a dumpster fire and all the horrible stuff that happened, and, you know, in every realm, celebrities dying and people, the contentious election, and everybody was upset, and science had its share of bad news and climate change. So instead, I want to talk about a story that I thought was neat. a smaller thing, but it's actually our number 99 story. Yeah, and we actually pick these a little. We don't spend hours deciding the order, but we try to put fun things in the 90s, because if you've made it to that point, we want to reward the reader a little bit. And number 99 is about how scientists were able to use specific high-energy X-rays. They looked at a painting by Edgar Degas, the French Impressionist, of a woman. And beneath this painting, they actually found another woman's face that lit up in the X-rays in the specific analysis they were doing, that they suspect is a model popular with painters from back then. Maybe she and Degas had a thing going. We call the story Degas' Other Woman, which I think is funny. So, like I said, not a huge deal. It's one of our shorter stories, but a reminder that science can do kind of neat, quirky things. That, oh, you know, they saw something was up with this painting. They had the tools to look into it, and they found a whole other painting underneath it, the old paint that he left on the canvas. You know, I think that's really neat. I like that science can go in and find small answers like this, too.
That's incredible. So that painting was completed sometime between 1876 and 1880. So Degas is suggesting he wasn't just an artist, he was a bit of a scientist, especially with the pigments that he used that could also be hidden.
Well, I mean, I think it was just using standard artistic tools at the time, and it just works out that when he did the first painting and then he decided, no, this isn't what he wanted to be, and he covered it up with the other one, I'm sure at the time he thought, no one will ever know. This is paint. I painted over it. Who's going to find out, right? But that's where we're at with science and, you know, engineering. We have these abilities that we can literally use X-rays to see the older pigments, the older paints that he used on the first painting light up behind the surface painting. And I think it's really neat.
That is neat is a good word to describe it. That's
Thank
a great
you.
Story. Number 99 in Discover Magazine's top 100 stories, science stories from 2016. Well, speaking of art and science and engineering, we couldn't have a conversation without talking about Elon Musk. We love him. You know, just hearing about the work he does is so creative. And I don't know, how many times did he figure into stories in the top 100? I'm focusing in on story number 17, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a bit of a running joke where when Elon Musk does something in a year, we're like, okay, here's his year in science story, because every year for the past three or four, he's had something in here. It was the Hyperloop 1 year and his solar farms and all his kind of futuristic stuff. If he were a bad guy, he'd be a total Bond villain with his volcano lair, probably. But yeah, he's all, you know, he's doing the work of the future, it seems like. And his SpaceX program is unusually successful in matters of space travel. And yeah, he's usually in here, but it's not really on purpose. We don't go looking for an Elon Musk story.
Okay. I figured he'd be in here at least once. And, well, mm-hmm. The one that I'm looking at, we followed this last year, I guess it was. One of the things, you know, space travel is so expensive, and some would say it's a, you know, something that's a bit of a waste of resources. Mm-hmm. And so what he's trying to do is return and reuse some of the rockets. So he had his Falcon 9 rockets return after, what were they doing, restocking the space station, mm-hmm. right? And it was unsuccessful a couple of times. But then what happened?
Yeah, it was a few failures, catastrophic failures, which in rocket science terms means explosions, usually. Mm-hmm. So those were not reusable afterwards. But then they kind of figured it out, and they were able to work it out so that they could send a rocket out into space and bring it back down and have it land safely on a barge in the middle of the ocean and then reuse it later on.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, like you said, it's been kind of the dream of space travel. The space shuttle was originally meant to be that kind of a commute into space, and that didn't quite work out. So if his luck holds out, and there's been some other rocky developments with some SpaceX rockets since, but if anyone can do this, it seems like it's Elon Musk.
Yeah. You know, one of the fascinating things to me was I heard this interview several years ago, and it was by Andy, the founder of Intel, Andy Gross. Well, forgot his name. But anyway, he was saying that the number one thing that would would be bigger than computers ever would be, and that would be if we can figure out how to solve this challenge of building a battery the right way. And, you know, so that's very exciting. And, of course, SolarX, which is now part of Tesla, has some really good battery products. So hopefully, I mean, there's national races. I mean, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Germans, and in some respects, the United States are really going after building a better battery. So it's going to be exciting to see what happens there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's got the vision for it, too. He can pull these things off, but he likes to plan ahead and have these big ideas, and hopefully they work out.
Andy Grove is the person I was thinking of, Andy Grove. I wanted to put something on the table on the medicine side, medical technology, and this was fascinating. This is story number 84 of 100, and it's about bypassing paralysis altogether. And would you like to talk about that one?
Yeah. This is another one that isn't, you know, doesn't talk about the universe, but it's still a really big deal. And we start out talking about this patient named Ian Burkhart, who broke his neck when he was 19, and that left him quadriplegic, paralyzed from, I think it was the elbows down. But now, thanks to new technology in the lab, they actually performed brain surgery on him and implanted electrodes into his brain, and were able to connect that to a cuff, kind of a sleeve that he puts on one of his arms below the elbow. And the electrical signals are able to stimulate the muscles in his arm, and so he can effectively use his arm and his hand and his wrist again. What I liked in the story was that he became so dexterous with it that he could play the video game Guitar Hero, which involves a lot of little manual dexterity in the fingers and everything. So it was, I would imagine, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it seems like a really big success. And now, of course, that doesn't mean we've cured paralysis. It can only work in the lab. He had to go through brain surgery to get it. So it's still kind of a difficult situation. But I like the progress we're making on this front, being able to, if somebody is paralyzed, help them use their own muscles again, their own body, by these synthetic means of connecting the brain back to the muscle in a different way.
Wow, that's really fascinating. And, you know, I'm wondering, Bill, along those lines, about any other medical advances. There is one, it's number 26 of the top stories of Discover magazine in 2016. And it's talking about drug couriers for brain injuries. It's a protein that would lead to a cure. So, you know, if you want to talk about that one or any other kind of medical technology that is enabling people to recover from traumatic things that happen to them, illnesses or injury.
Right. I remember that story, but I didn't work on it, and I haven't looked at it in a little while, so I don't want to speak out of turn necessarily on the couriers for brain injuries. I will talk a little bit about, sort of in the medical realm, but a few stories later, I think it was, about the study that was able to kind of find the genes for depression.
Oh, yes, that was
fascinating. Mental health is still, yeah, it's still really important. It's just as important as, you know, physical body health, I suppose. And it's a field that every year it seems like there's at least a few new findings. I know a couple years ago there was one on schizophrenia and being able to kind of pinpoint what's going on in the brain and what's happening there. And so this year we wrote about being able to, yeah, pinpoint depression genes in a huge study of thousands of people, I want to say. Again, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it was a really good sign for being able to help people, you know, suffering from this affliction that affects just so many people and untold numbers, probably. And we're able to start making headway and start being able to find not necessarily a cure, but again, like with Zika, kind of where it is in our genetic makeup and what's going on that's causing this, and from there being able to try and do something about it, which would be great.
Yeah, that's so great. And in that story as well, it shows the power that we have of harnessing a lot of information through crowdsourcing. And I think that's how they were able to arrive at some conclusions within that depression, with identifying the depression gene. That's a great story. That one was number 30.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and that was, I like that part of it. I know that the company, it was, the specific company was 23andMe, and I know there's a little bit of a controversy between how accurate some of these companies are and what they're doing with the data and everything, but the fact is that people are interested in it, and they're willing to get that information and send their money in. So now that we do have that, let's put it to good use and be able to use all that data and figure out some of these problems that have been affecting so many people.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, you know, and this has been sort of a theme of Cool Science Radio that we would point to from time to time, and that would be that it used to be 30 and 40 years ago that these disciplines were standalone islands, and they weren't talking with people within their own disciplines. And now there's a collaboration going on that we've never seen before, and it's interdisciplinary. You get biologists and chemists and astrophysicists and artists all working together on problems. And as Lynn mentioned just now, crowdsourcing has become such an integral part of this that the crowd is always smarter than any one individual. And if you have the right tools and the right algorithms to be able to reach crowdsourcing possibilities, I mean, it's really pushing things forward. I mean, that's not very specific, but maybe that could be a science, a top 100 science story one year.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of precedent for it, like with this specific study that they found the depression gene. I know in years past, a crowdsourced project in astronomy called the Galaxy Zoo, and then other zoo projects, the Zooniverse. It's all people who have, in their spare moments, go and look at pictures and classify galaxies. Are they spirals? Are they this other shape? Are they that? And eventually they find new weird things, and they can discover things, and what are these things? Let's ask the scientist in charge. And the scientist, I don't know. I'm glad that you saw that. I wouldn't have seen that. And so I know that's just one example of where, the collective wisdom, the crowds, people who aren't necessarily doing this 40 hours a week, but when they have a moment, they're interested and they want to help out. They are literally furthering science by doing so. And occasionally, yeah, some discoveries come out of those projects that are worthy of inclusion in our list.
Yeah. Well, Bill, it's been great speaking with you again. Bill Andrews, who's the senior associate editor for Discover Magazine, and we've had a conversation about the 100 top stories of 2016, and the stories themselves are really exciting, but what's really cool is what this will mean for all of us in the future. So, Bill, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Okay. When we return, we're going to have a conversation with Mark Saltzman. He's a syndicated technology journalist who writes about the latest in consumer electronics. He's attending this year's CES, Computer Electronics Show, in Las Vegas. Stay with us.
And just one update on the weather, and we've been getting some phone calls here while we've been doing our live interview. I haven't been able to take them, but we could hear your update if you called 649-9004 extension 0, and Ethel will take your call and let us know what's going on, and we'll announce it. But about a half an hour ago, 224 was backed up all the way out onto I-80 eastbound. So slow going out there. Please be careful. It's snowing hard in Old Town, and just take some extra time and drive slowly, and we will keep you updated next time we get an update through Ethel, again at 649-9004 extension 0 if you have a specific update. We'll be right back after these words.
Hi, this is Dr. Juliana Miller from Miller Orthodontics, a proud supporter of The Local View with Randy Barton. With a combined 45 years of orthodontic experience, my husband and I are now raising our family and working full-time in the Park City community. There are so many reasons to smile in Park City. More information at m2ortho.com.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, KPCW supporter, providing personalized knee and shoulder care, focusing on cartilage restoration and joint resurfacing, and now incorporating stem cell therapy. More information on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with John Wells. We're waiting to get our next guest, Mark Saltzman, on the line. He's a syndicated technology journalist who writes about the latest in consumer electronics. He's down in Las Vegas, where I don't know if it's a blizzard down there, too, but he's at the Consumer Electronics Show that happens every year about this time. Really interesting. 25 different marketplaces. So you've got anything from virtual reality, they call it augmented reality, I think is the correct term, to what's going on in 3D printing, to education technology and gaming, global technology. It's everything you can think of, even down to baby toys and technology.
What's fascinating is that it all started 50 years ago in 1967, the first Consumer Electronics Show was in New York City, and I saw this black and white photo of the first show, and I think they had 170 exhibitors, and I think they're up to 3,800 exhibitors now, and it's just in that first show, it was black and white televisions, transistor radios, and you know those consoles they used to build were this big piece of furniture. You'd have a TV and a stereo built into it. So that was part that was the first year. And now, of course, well, we'll be speaking with Mark in a minute. I believe he's going to be calling us now as we work through this. It's, of course, a completely different world. It's in Las Vegas. There's over 3,800 exhibitors, over 6 million square feet of exhibition space.
Can you imagine the technology geeks that are there this week? You'd love to be there.
Oh, there must be drones flying everywhere.
That's
robots,
right.
Voice activated. Yeah, it's going to be.
You know, speaking of TVs, and I think it's just me because I tend to watch a lot of TV, not on my TV, but on my mobile device.
Yeah.
And that's okay with me. And I know a lot of kids, you know, my kids are always, you know, they're watching it on their iPad or their computer or their phone. So I wondered about the waning popularity of TVs. And there is a TV, there's a big television component at the Consumer Electronics Show, one that's a screen that is as thick as a picture that you hang on your wall.
That's right.
And the way that they mount it is with magnets. So very interesting. And it looks like we have our next guest on the line. It's Mark Salzman. He's a syndicated technology journalist who writes about the latest in consumer electronics. Salzman contributes to more than 40 publications, including USA Today, Yahoo, MSN, and others. He's authored 16 technology books and has appeared on hundreds of television stations. Mark is joining us by phone from the Consumer Electronics Show, again in Las Vegas, to help us understand what gadgets are making news, plus some of the top trends being introduced. It's where you see them first. Mark Salzman, welcome to Cool Science Radio. And we don't have him. Ah, ha, ha, ha.
Oh, there's another line. Come
there on. Is. Let's give this one a try. And good morning to you.
Hey, how's it going? Have you guys heard about the traffic?
Yes, we have on 224, but give us an update.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm on the 224 was backed up all the way to the 80, and then the 40, the right lane heading south to get off into Park City, is backed up all the way almost to Home Depot.
Wow. Okay. From 40, so that's going eastbound, trying to get into Park City, get off on the exit from 40 on to 248. It's backed up to Home Depot. Okay. That's good.
Yeah, almost back to Home Depot, yeah.
Okay. Great. Well,
in the right lane, yep.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
For letting us know.
Yeah, going to take me about 40 to 45 minutes to get from Kimball Junction to Prospector.
Oh, that's scary. Okay. Yeah, thanks for checking in. Appreciate it.
Carmageddon number two.
Oh, there we go. Just what we wanted. Just what we were waiting for.
While we're waiting to get Mark on the phone, we will do today's cool story. And let's just do it right now. If you have been anywhere near a television the last 3 weeks, you may have seen the trailer for Kevin Costner's new movie, Hidden Figures, which opens tomorrow to a national audience. It is the untold story of black women mathematicians that were hired by NASA as human computers who use pencil slide rules and adding machines to calculate the numbers that would launch rockets and astronauts into space.
Yeah, it's a true story. It's based on the book called Hidden Figures by Margot Lee Shetterly. John and I interviewed Margot back in September, and if you'd like to hear a podcast of our conversation with Margot, you can go to kpcw.org under Cool Science Radio. Scroll to the September 16th, 2016 show. I mean, it's a story that perhaps has a little hype than a Kevin Costner blockbuster, but it's really a beautiful story finally being told, and these are our favorite kinds of stories that we hear on Cool Science Radio. It was really left a deep impression on me. So it's going to be a great movie as well.
Yeah, and Lynn and I have been doing Cool Science Radio for 3.5 years now, and I believe all of our shows are in podcast form. Again, go to kpcw.org and either use the search facility for a specific show, or you can scroll through to a particular date.
That's right. Hey, remember when we did the interview on Alan Turing? And then literally like 3 months later, the movie came out, The Imitation Game.
Yes.
With my favorite, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes.
And it was so wonderful. So these interviews that we do often, you know, there's been a handful that have ended up in a major blockbuster. Once we have done, and I'm sure it's quite sure it's because we did the interview, right, with the book,
of course,
and that kind of launched it.
You love to say Benedict, don't you?
I do.
You like him a lot.
Oh, I love him. He's great. And I saw him in Doctor Strange recently.
Oh, wow.
I loved that. I heard mixed reviews. And then also, I am pretty addicted right now to Sherlock.
Is there a new season out? Because I've gone through everything.
I think there are just 3 seasons,
okay,
right? And I don't know if... Have you seen the third season? Because I just see it after the fact on Netflix.
Okay. Is that the bride that was killing everybody? Was that the season?
I haven't seen that.
Okay. You're going to like that one.
But mostly I love Benedict. Okay. Well, we are not having great success getting Mark Salzman on the line, but he is at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. It must be very distracting to do that. So we'll take a short break, and maybe we'll come back and talk about some of the other top 100 stories from Discover Magazine's Top 100 Stories of 2016. Always a great topic when we return. Stay with us.
This is Earl Foote, founder of Nexus IT, a proud sponsor of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Nexus IT provides comprehensive cybersecurity solutions to help protect your business from hackers and today's internet-borne security threats. More information at nexusitc.net or at 435-487-9099.
Hi, I'm Joe Simmons with the Park City High School. Stay in touch with all things Miners with our weekly Miner Nation Report. We'll bring it to you every Monday morning during Morning News with Leslie Thatcher, and in the afternoon with The Local View with Randy Barton. Highlights, scores, schedules, all things Park City Miners athletics. The Miner Nation Report is brought to you in part by the Park City UPS Stores, Elliott Work Group, U.S. Bank Park City, and Miller Orthodontics.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm trying to get Mark Salzman on the line at the Consumer Electronic Show. And I don't know, maybe it's a blizzard down there in Las Vegas as well. But we hope to get him sometime in the next 10 minutes or so. But
well, the show starts today, this morning, and it runs until the 8th. They're expecting hundreds of thousands of people to attend this year. There's 3,800 exhibitors. And one of the big things is people believe that 4K televisions, the successor to 1080p, the high-definition resolution found on most of our modern TV sets today, is making headway. The term 4K, another name for Ultra HD, refers to screens with two times the vertical resolution and twice the horizontal resolution of 1080p sets. So it's interesting. I mean, they started out at $25,000, and they've come down in price significantly. But you need to have shows, you know, filmed in 4K. And then, of course, you need the certain television. And then you need the broadcast organization to broadcast in 4K. So there's a lot of pieces that have to come together. But, you know, I look at my 1080p set right now, and I don't know about you, Lynn, but I'm pretty happy. You know, I sit down and I watch a Pats game on a large screen, and you know, get the popcorn, and my dog's there with me, and I feel like I'm there at the game. It's a lot easier than struggling in traffic to get to Gillette Stadium.
Yeah. Well, I've got to come over to your house, John, because I tend to be going the other way. You know, the better my computer gets, the less I watch the TV. So
really? Okay.
I tend to not even care. The home theater just doesn't appeal to me. But, you know, maybe if we get in touch with Mark, he can tempt me a bit more. You know, out of the 25 different marketplaces at the Consumer Electronics Show, there is one that is for drones and drones only, which is kind of interesting to me. Drones and other unmanned systems have really taken off as a unique tool for really for everyday life, even though some of us are in denial about that. But we find them to be useful on the one hand and really annoying on the other. But regardless of whether flight is controlled by onboard computers or remotely from the ground, they're everywhere, and it's really the way that we capture and monitor and assist our world around us.
There's a lot of drones out there. The one by DJI's Phantom 4, which is a very popular model, was about $1,400 to $1,500 this time last year, and that's down to just under $1,000 now. So the price point is dropping, and there are other firms that are out there with drones that have the capabilities of the Phantom 4 for just under $600. So there's certainly a lot of competition, and that's always good for driving prices down. It also appears that smart home systems are maturing. Apple's jumped into this thing. Recently, a neighbor of mine, and we're going to be having her on in the next several weeks, who has started a tech company, a smart home tech company, where by using your cell phone, you can control lights inside and outside of the house, and you can do things, of course, remotely, turn your lights off, or on when you're out of town unexpectedly, that sort of thing. So there's a lot going on there. And where just a couple of years ago, you'd get a Nest thermostat where you could control the temperature of your home from afar, I just don't know if we're ready for this, but they will be announcing refrigerators at the CES show where you can, from afar, you can control the temperature of your refrigerator. And if you're in the kitchen, you don't need a smartphone. These refrigerators that they're talking about are voice activated. So
why would you want to control the temperature of your refrigerator? Don't we just set it and
I don't know. You know, it says controlling temperature and humidity and, you know, who knows?
Maybe you could go to extreme ice cube production mode from remotely if you know that, you know, you're bringing some friends home for a party.
It's never nice. Never enough ice cubes. It's always a good feeling when you have extra ice cubes. Yeah, I think that's a little overkill.
Yeah. So self-driving cars are actually another one of the marketplaces there. Self-driving technology marketplace is chock full of automotive tech. That's another great, very interesting portion of the marketplace. And I think we've got Mark Salzman on the phone. We're going to take a quick break and bring him in. Stay with us.
It's fun to stay at the YMCA. Village People return to the Egyptian Theater for four high-energy shows January 4th through 7th with special pricing Wednesday and Thursday nights. Join the Kings of Disco with hits like YMCA, In the Navy, Macho Man, and more. Tickets are available at parkcityshows.com or by calling the box office at 649-9371. Egyptian Theater is a nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter.
This is Courtney Johansson with the Spur Bar and Grill, and we are proud to support KPCW. With our new 352 Main Street entrance, the Spur now features three bars serving breakfast, lunch, dinner, drinks, and dancing. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. with live music every night. More information at thespurbarandgrill.com.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. Well, after we, John and I, tried to predict everything at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, finally we got our guest Mark Salzman on the line. He's a syndicated technology journalist who writes about the latest, and we're happy he could be joining us. Good morning to you, Mark.
And good morning to you. Thanks for your patience this morning. It's the show floor hasn't even officially opened yet, and it's been a bit hairy here. So we're talking 2.5 million square feet of showroom floor space and about 200,000 exhibitors, attendees, I should say, with thousands of exhibitors setting up their wares. So it's I appreciate you carving out some time for us to chat.
Well, I'm glad you could finally join us. Since we're in the middle of a blizzard here in Park City, we thought maybe that was the issue down there too.
Yeah, I heard. And an avalanche warning, I heard too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mark, if you would describe, it's so much to take in. It's got to be overwhelming. It's like turning on a fire hose and putting your mouth in front of it. How do you decide where to go? Do you have a particular marketplace that you prefer? Talk about that.
Yeah, so this is, by the way, the 50th anniversary of the annual Consumer Electronics Show, which takes place every January in Las Vegas. And it's a window to the future of the tech space. And that is obviously there's many different verticals there, a lot of different categories. So there's home entertainment, there's self-driving cars and other connected car technologies. There's mobility, like wearables and smartphones and accessories. There's smart home gadgets like Wi-Fi thermostats and video cameras. So there's so many different categories, drones and robots, you name it, biotech. So it's a lot to cover. So overwhelming is a good word because it's such a big show, and there's only so many days to cover it. So it's a great show, though. As a tech writer, I get very excited about this. I'm like a kid to candy store here.
I bet. So, you know, it's probably maybe unwise to ask you, but I'm going to do it anyway. You know, what are the top two things that you've seen? You know, talk about self-driving technology, if that's an area that you write about.
Yeah, sure. So Chrysler unveiled they call it the Portal prototype. So Portal is a car of the future, a self-driving car that's electric, and it's meant for millennials. And the idea is that they wanted, from all their testing, they wanted a modular design. So it's an open sort of inner cabin, but you can add or remove seats as need be. So it grows with the family, if you will. You have more kids, you buy more seats, and you snap them in. They can rotate and face each other if you're being driven around. So there's some pretty cool things there. A lot of tech, of course, under the hood. And that's called the Chrysler Portal System. There's also smart bikes here from LaEco. They have these smart bikes that have sensors, radar, and sonar cameras that can alert you to the cyclist to what's happening around them. There's a small touchscreen, so I was just on one of those a couple of minutes ago. So their smart cars and connected cars are one of the biggest categories here. In fact, there's a running joke that the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, the C used to stand for consumer, but now it's more like the car electronics show. But all the big guys are here, so it's pretty cool.
We were talking earlier about a black and white photo that I saw of the first CES show in New York City back in 1967, and it was transistor radios, black and white TVs,
yeah,
and stereos.
The stuff that you would see on the show floor here today would look like science fiction back in 1967, self-driving cars and, hovering drones that that follow you around and react to your voice commands and TVs that you could roll up. It's pretty outstanding how far we've come in such a short amount of time. There's a lot of cool tech. So speaking of those TVs, by the way, I'm talking to you right now from the Sony booth, and they unveiled last night their first ever OLED TV for consumers. So OLED uses a different kind of panel. There's no backlighting required because each of the 8 million dots or pixels is its own light source. What they're doing with all that space back there is they're putting in a speaker. So now audio emanates through the screen itself, which is pretty wild. That's called the X1E. It's their flagship OLED or OLED TV that should hit the market sometime later this year.
And what is that baby going to go for?
Yeah, they don't say, right? That's
right.
The thing with Consumer Electronics Show. A lot of it, if it's not a prototype, then they still would rather wait. They don't want to show their cards just yet. And they're obviously trying to find the sweet spot between a product that's going to make them some cash and not be over the top for consumers. For example, there's a 2 terabyte thumb drive that caught my attention, and then I found out it was almost $1,000. I was like, okay, yeah. I can stick with my 64 gigabyte one. 2 terabytes is 2,000 gig on a thumbstick, like a flash drive, but I'm not going to spend four figures on it. So
there's a technology like voice activation is finding itself into many of the verticals at the show and shows tremendous promise for the future. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's the evolution of the interface. So there used to be buttons and switches. Then we moved to keyboards and then mice and then trackpads and, touch. And then now voice. And so it's just, going back to the mid-60s again, Star Trek, Commander Kirk talked to the computer with his voice. And, it was a very natural interface. And that is what we've all been striving for, is whether it's Apple Siri, Google's own technology, Google Now, Amazon's Alexa, or Microsoft's Cortana. They're starting to embed smart voice recognition and a human-like voice response into the home, into the car, into the office, and even in your pocket on your smartphone. So that's where it's going. It's very natural. It's getting smarter and smarter all the time. And they say talking is about 3 or 4 times faster than typing. So
yeah.
You can see the benefits there.
Absolutely. Where Mark Salzman is a syndicated technology journalist. He's writing about the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. I wish we could talk to you longer, but our live show is just about over. We've got to cut to NPR.
All right.
So, Mark, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure. Drive safe. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Well, I'd love to talk to him more. Maybe we can get him back on for a taped interview. Thanks very much to our underwriters, San Francisco Design, Berkshire Hathaway, Home Services, Utah Properties, Peak Art and Frame, Davidson Orthopedics, Nexus IT, and the Natural History Museum of Utah, and Park City Mountain. It's KPCW Park City.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel. 565-4730, ParkCityAirCruiseAndTravel.com. Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, ParkCityBikeDemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-local.